You're listening to the Northern Virginia Business Podcast. My name is Jessica Dubois.
And I'm Derek Wynn. Here, we chronicle the stories of successful business owners and executives who stand out from the crowd.
Whether you're driven by purpose or profit, tune in to learn how these leaders have built successful businesses,
helping to shape the landscape of Northern Virginia.
I was born in Vietnam, came to the U.S. when I was 6 years old. So my dad was a part of the Vietnam War. He was in Saigon when Saigon fell, and he was almost like a military police officer. So he was more like a cop, but technically they're part of the uniform service with the military. So he was waiting for the North Vietnamese to come at that time. He was going to give them his life, right? But thank God things didn't work out the way it did. So the U.S. years later sponsored my dad. I guess he became a prisoner of war, or he went to re-education camp. So any military officer that went to re-education camp did 4 years in prison or in re-education camp were allowed to come to the U.S. So we got that sponsorship. So in 1990, I was 6 years old. Family came to the U.S., but not on a boat, though. It would be cool if it's on a boat. But I came on an airplane, just like, the rest of us in the modern society.
And where did you all move to?
So we lived in this there's mom, dad, sister, brother. So there's all five of us at that time. We moved into our uncle's house. We lived in a small room. And there was like five of us.
What was it like being an immigrant in the Northern Virginia area?
You know what? When I was young, I didn't really know I was an immigrant. I just thought we're moving somewhere and this is our new spot, you know? I didn't think that, you know, I would be in a completely different environment where people would see you differently. Arlington was very diverse at that time anyways. Our school was, I think, 70% were, you know, of all different ethnic groups. So the majority were not white Caucasian. So I felt I fit in pretty well. When you're a kid, you absorb everything. So what you learn in school, start to learn how to speak English. Also have a identity crisis for like ever. When I realized I was traveling to Vietnam, where I learned about my culture a little bit, I began to understand that I was more of a Vietnamese American than try to fit in with the Americans. Went through all that identity crisis and was able to figure my life out a little bit.
Did your parents help with that? Like, what was their perspective on keeping your culture?
Not at all. My dad were like, when he got his U.S. citizen, he renamed everybody, but like with an American name. Your name is going to be Tim. Your name is going to be Tommy. I'm going to be Thomas. We all had like an English name and we all took our Vietnamese name off. My mom and dad, like, they wanted us to learn the culture because this was to them their country. It was, they're not going back there no matter what. If they're getting kicked back there, they're gonna try to take a speedboat and come back to the U.S. right away. They believe in the American dream, and they taught me to believe in it. And it's a matter of hard work, and whatever you do, just do it with all your heart and do it in the right way. And
it seems like they instilled a lot of like great values in you, and I know this because I know you well. But what did they do for work when they moved here?
When we first came here, my mom went to clean people's houses. She was a cleaner. She would carry me around. I was really young at that time, sitting in like someone's dining table or something, just playing my toys. A few months later, my uncle got an opportunity. He opened like a laundry mat, and that's where my mom and dad would help out for basically 7 days a week. Whenever I'm done with school, I would be over there with them. Actually, this is crazy. And I don't think I've ever told anybody this, but we would stay there at night. We would stay and sleep at the laundromat, because we were afraid it was going to get breaked in. Mm-hmm. So because my dad was a military, but he was a police officer. So he didn't care about all that stuff. He's like, no, my family, we're going to stay here, protect the store. Those were the moments, though. Those were the fun times that I remember because I get to spend time with mom and dad. My mom and dad would work probably 364 days out of the year. You know, the only days that they have is off is Christmas. They'll wake up early. They'll be at their job around 7 a.m., then come back around like 9:30, get ready for bed for us. And then we don't get to see them until the morning.
How does that impact what you decide to do, like as you get into high school and you're thinking about college? Yeah. How does your childhood of seeing your parents work so hard inspire you as a student?
It's because they work so hard, you feel like you got to repay them somehow, you know? Mom and dad never got a day off. Everything was for us. So for me, my big why, my main purpose in life was to really get everything that mom and dad need and want and, you know, repay all the debt that I've gotten for them. And that's always propelled me forward. That's always got me to make my decisions. Because I can tell mom and dad, like, hey, you don't have to wake up this early. I got money. Let's make it happen. So that was the main driver.
I kind of share that with you. I definitely get that. Instead of taking that look around and think that you are missing out on something, you just appreciate how hard your parents work for you and want to spend the rest of your life seeing a smile on their face. I completely relate with that. So tell me about school. Like, I saw that you went to school for psychology. I had no idea.
So I went to my undergrad. I was so lost. I went to Mason, just down in Fairfax. And I wanted to become a doctor because I thought mom and dad would be proud of it. But originally I came into Mason wanting to be a psychologist. So I got my major in biology, minor in chemistry, and then a minor in psychology. Last year for undergrad, I realized that I am not a doctor. Kept getting all C's in cell psychology. So that was the way I knew that being a doctor was not one of them. I ended up getting my master's in industrial and organizational psychology. And then doing the whole program, I was just like, heck, why not go the extra mile? So I worked on my PhD. At that time, it was a doctorate of psychology. In Chicago, the Chicago School for Professional Psychology. It's an all grad school downtown. 8 months away from literally defending my final dissertation, I realized this is not what I want. I had a best friend. He never went to college. And he was, at that time, we're 27 years old, 28. He was retired. Like, technically, he didn't have to work. And I asked him, well, where'd you get all the money from? Or, you know, what'd you do? Did you steal some money from somebody? He said, no, I'm a realtor. Yeah, he was a real estate agent since he was 18 years old. He bought like 5 properties and that generated his passive income every month. I looked at myself in retrospect. I was just like, wow, this guy never went to college. And here I am, 8th year into my graduate work, and I'm going to come out broke. -210. I'm going to be owing student loans for the rest of my life. And I realized that when I graduate with my PhD, this shows nothing. It's just a letter to say from a school says, okay, he did his education. I think the real education is in life. So the sooner you get out or I get out of school, the sooner I can make money, gain experience and whatnot. And so I made, I guess, the dumbest decision at that time, but it was probably the better decision of my life, was to drop out of my PhD program with 8 months left. People were like thinking I'm crazy. I think they thought I broke up with somebody and I went crazy. But no, it's just I felt I didn't want to spend any more money. And that's how I got into real estate, right? It's not about the degree. You know, it's your purpose in life. At the end of the day, yeah, I felt like a total loser. You know, my first year, I was just out. I was in debt. I was like, what am I going to do? You know, but real estate, like in most sales, they don't look at qualifications in terms of degrees. We look at production. You know, we look at that. Who has the drive?
I don't think that there has been a holiday, like a main holiday, that I haven't gotten some type of handwritten note from you that signed, like something special that makes you stand out. Like, did that start with real estate or have you always kind of been like that?
No, that started definitely with real estate. And it's, I think for me, real estate is a lifestyle change. It's not even, you know, because my mentor, Steve Gaskin, who is the principal broker right now at our own firm, when I sat down with him, he really wanted to develop me. He saw the potential in me. And, you know, we believe in this really similar things. for me is always about, you know, God being first and family. And so it connected well with Keller Williams and what they're trying to accomplish. And Steve would always tell me, you know, to practice writing notes, because writing notes is that allowing, it's just basically giving a lot of your time away to show, let people know how much you appreciate people in life. And it just flows so well with my mentality and what I do. That was the way, you know, I was able to connect with a lot of my clients, because I'm not the hard sell type of guy that can stand at open houses and try to, you know, do all these, I say they call it script in real estate. And I'm all about scripts, you know, like saying, hey, hello, how are you, is almost a script, if you believe it or not, right? I think when you say hi to someone, you expect someone to say hi back. It's all script wise, but I just can't flow that. It doesn't work as well. But what does work is really calling people to hang out for coffee, writing notes with them, because I'm thinking about them at that instant moment. I don't want to call them and say, hey, I'm just thinking about you. I literally just spend my time writing a note and then putting the stamp on and hope that they can receive my thought 7 days down the road. And, you know, it's been well. So my thing is, I always try to write two notes every single day.
Yeah, I think it's creating those good habits that just seem normal to you.
Yeah, correct. I think success is a habit, right? It's like you're not born to be like successful or something. You have to create it as a habit, as a tendency, mm-hmm. just like you waking up early every day.
I want to get into the mentorship. So you had brought up your mentor, Steve. Is he someone that you sought out? Like you sought out a mentor, or did you guys just gravitate towards each other?
Yeah, no, it's so funny. I was in a different firm when I started real estate. And then we were watching this program. It's called the Buffini program, right? The Buffini, it's a different style of just real, how to do business in real estate. And then his name, Steve Gaskin, shows up. His picture shows up about how like he does a wonderful business. And this was probably years ago. And so they wanted to highlight it. I was like, oh, that's cool. That's really awesome. Oh, he's in Virginia. I didn't know that. Cool, cool, right? It's on my head. So after like, you're moving to a different, like looking for a different firm. It's funny. I got another agent who was in my curtain office right now, reached out to me. We had a coffee and went out for lunch. And then Christian is her name. She's my mentor now too. And she ends up saying, oh yeah, you should come to my office. You know, Steve Gaskin does a wonderful, you know, great way to develop, has a great mentorship program. He's great. I was like, oh, I know Steve. It's funny how that worked out. And I was like, I've always wanted to reach out to him. And I've heard so many people in the business has just say, you got to go to Steve. You got to go to Steve. He knows how to develop people and how to truly let you grow. I didn't believe that. I was just like, whatever, you know, until I met the guy. You know, Steve calls me one day on the phone. And that time I was just like, if God ever sounded like somebody, it was him. It was Steve Gaskin. So I got to meet the guy. He's for me. He was like almost my idol. So when I met them, I knew right then and there, I wanted to grow with the company. Steve Gaskin told me this one time. I was sitting there. I was like, Steve, you think I can do this? Literally, it's just a conversation. But it was that slap, you know, that says, he was just like, Tim, you don't have to believe in yourself. I do. Let me believe in you.
That's where the magic happens, I think. It's you wanting it and you having the life experiences that have led you to where you are today. And then that's connected with someone that makes you believe that you're special or that you can do whatever you want to do.
Self-confidence is developed. It's not something that you were born with. At least I wasn't born with self-confidence. I actually lack a lot of self-confidence. But through time, through training, and through a lot of miniature success, you get where you need to go. And then it's a compounding effect after that. It keeps trickling down. But you have to develop it constantly. And you have to own up to it. You have to say, you know what? This is going to make me nervous. Let's do it anyways, you know?
What advice would you give a smart, driven college student, non-college student who's about to enter the real world and they want to do real estate? What type of advice would you give them?
I think I'll give probably two advice, maybe three. We'll see. But first advice I'll give is, hey, calm down. You're not like smarter than, you know, the rest of the world. I think when we get a college degree, we have a tendency to come out thinking that, yeah, we're going to be the CEO in 2 years. you know, and it's okay to have that mindset, but it's going to be a hard journey. Just first of all, learn to be humble. I think it's just a saying that, okay, you know, when you're in this protected education system that tells you you're the best 20% of the population, well, yes and no. You're educated, but that education comes with more practice, right? It's knowledge is power. You know, you have to put that into application. My second advice I would say is to do what you really like, not find a job that pays the bill. And it sounds tough, right? Because I think that's the tough part is to, you got a degree, you kind of come out forcing yourself to go into limiting yourself to go into that field that you have to. But for me, it's like, if I'm passionate about something, I'm creating something, okay? I want to work at it, but I need time to do that. So I'm going to go apply to Starbucks. Yes, I got a 4-degree master's. I can still work at a Starbucks and work at whatever field that makes me happy, even if it doesn't pay much. But that's how you want to start, I believe. Like, do something that you really love. Why? Because you can put in the hours because you love it. I love real estate. So I'm sorry, you and I, we're doing this podcast. I don't know when you're going to play, but you're doing it on a Sunday, okay? On holidays, I'm here. It's not because I feel like, oh, I got to sacrifice myself. It's because I love it. I'm happy when I get this contract through. I'm happy that I can do something that was impossible for many agents. I'm happy that I can win a contract over 20 other offers, you know? To me, that's the mentality you got to have. So really, two things was to be humble and to come out understanding that you got to do what you love.
Well, as a real estate advisor, you also help own a restaurant. You're also a boxing coach. Yeah. Do you ever feel overwhelmed with all of this, or does it ever get you to a point where you're not able to focus on what it is you really want to do?
No. So real estate is always going to be my main thing, no matter what. Coaching, all that is my passion. They don't pay you enough anyways, you know, to be in this coaching business. Do I get burnout? Of course, all the time. So I have to always watch how much I can go and plan time to stop. I have this planner. This is my life every single day. Besides my phone and my planner, I plan Sunday, you know, the week before that I'm planning. And then every night before the next day, I'm planning my day, and it's by the 30 minute or by hour. And I found that it helps my life to be much more efficient. That calendar sets the priority that is important to me.
Well, and there was a time last year where I know you and I were both planning solo trips.
Yeah.
But I remember when you were planning for this trip and you were kind of at that burnout stage, like you needed to get away. Like, tell me about that.
Yeah, so the burnout was just being in the business real estate for too long, not having breaks. I would do 7 days a week every day. Workout would be 7 days a week. Maybe once a month I'll take a break. And I'm actually heading there right now in terms of physical breakdown because I can feel it in my body. Like last night, I literally had to sleep, you know, maybe 30 an hour extra. So how does that feel? You don't know it's coming until it comes. So it's you thought like, oh yeah, you gotta have life balance, right? I think that's easy for people that are, I'll say like not lazy, but it's easy for people that aren't just productive. Well, it's productive for me. I'm just going. We don't have time to sit back and say, oh crap, you know, where's my anchor at? You know, we kind of lost it somewhere because we're running, you know, 100 miles per hour. So that burnout, how does that feel? It's like you're not processing. You're like a walking zombie. That's how I felt. Just walking, and I knew it was a burnout and I couldn't do anything because if I push more, I'll be just more exhausted physically and mentally. So, But I was glad I was able to take that vacation and came back ready to rock.
Yes, rock right into a pandemic is what happened. Right now, we're at a point where we're 8 months into this pandemic, but in the Northern Virginia real estate market is hot. It has been since I got here. So we have low interest rates. We also have the pandemic going on. Have you seen an impact on the residential real estate market with the pandemic going on, or are we just in this bubble here?
before this bubble was gone, we already had this short inventory. So homes were going, it was just going, it was still rocking it. There's people that couldn't afford homes. It was just so high. Everybody at that point kept wanting to wait until the price apparently go down, or they thought the real estate market was going to crash. But when the pandemic hit, now we're even shorter on inventory. What happened? Interest rate went down much more. We had more buyers going out with less homes. And so that created an impact on home prices. So now home prices has gone skyrocketed up. And for me, I think we live in a great market in this DC area where it's always protected. It's hard to have this crash, right? Everyone's always afraid of the real estate crashing just because of the last crash was pretty much led by the real estate and mortgage crash. Mm-hmm. And so everyone's afraid of that happening again. But safe measures are already in place. So it's going to be hard for the real estate market to crash. So don't anticipate that. The smartest people in the industry has predicted that's not going to happen. I think we're long away from that. Well, here's what I think, though, around this area and maybe around the country, too, that the pandemic has increased the price and the Fed's not going to reduce the rates any lower. It's going to last for, say, 6 months or something like that. Home prices will slow down. But what I mean by that, it's not going to have a real estate crash. We're just going to slow down to a normal. And that normal could be here in this area is still pretty high compared to the rest of the world or the rest of the country. And so they're going to have a slowdown because all this skyrocket price is unsustainable.
What are the worst mistakes people are making right now in real estate? Buyers or sellers?
I think in terms of buyer is not buying. It's funny how you say it because people are thinking prices has gone significantly up. Yes, but if you're going to wait, you think prices are going to go down? You know, it's not going to go down. Prices will slow down. So you waiting another year, prices would probably increase another, 7%. So whatever you're trying to wait and save, you're going to pay that same price the next year. My advice to buyer is buy. Seller is you price your home well, where it's maybe if it's 500, if its value, the market value is 500, you price it maybe 10,000 below it. And then let buyers bid on to the house and then have a bunch of multiple offers. And you're able to remove a lot of contingency and leverage it out. Leverage your contracts out. But some sellers don't see that. They just want to price their home high, even because they're like, isn't the real estate market, heating up right now? So you can sell my house for a little bit more, right? Not necessarily. If it's too high, people are not going to buy it.
What areas are you seeing the best right now for the real estate market? Like what's hot right now?
Everyone's always wanted to be around the Beltway. So anything... Yeah. In Falls Church, Arlington is always a hotbed. Anything around D.C., it's getting farther. The far down south is probably Woodbridge. It's going to stop there. But there's still people that cannot purchase Falls Church, Arlington. They're moving out down south, down to Woodbridge. And then even pushing down west, down to Sterling now. Sterling's already pretty up there. But down to Ashburn. I think Ashburn has already been well built. I've also had people buying properties in Haymarket area. So it's just expanding in our world. And this little particular location has grown so fast these past 10 to 20 years that home prices has just been so good for everybody if you're a seller. And I don't see that stopping anytime soon. If it does stop, it'll still kick back up again. So
but I wonder if the pandemic's helped areas that are farther out develop more. People are getting used to this virtual workplace. I've seen a lot of clients who are now expanding their work from home policies to half of the week or full-time work from home, even after the pandemic. People don't necessarily need to buy something that's close to DC or close to a metro station. Those things become less important, right?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think that's might be the trend of the little bit of the future down the road where people are trying to move out a little bit farther, get some more space in between. That can also be a healthy thing for the real estate market. So that we, as a real estate agent, we don't always want prices to go up all the time. We have buyers that now our buyers can't afford homes, and we don't want that. You know, we want it to be just keeping, there's always checks and balance. You got to have both, because if a buyer buys into this house, the seller's going to sell. It's the same market. I'm working with both buyers and seller. I'm suffering if anyone suffers, right? Mm-hmm. So we want a good real estate market where there's good opportunity to buy at the same time you're selling well. And I prefer that too, if we could. And I think that trend is definitely trending up. But that still, I don't believe that trend will in any way take down the real estate market, because everyone's moving out of the city. That's probably going to be not around here. That'll be great though. Then I'll be purchasing all these property up in DC. That'd be great. We'll be 20 years down the road, Jessica.
So. You can expand Fall 14, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell me about it.
Well, I think of it as being intimidating, you know. A lot of my friends in their late 20s, early 30s, looking at buying a home, and the housing prices, I mean, they're looking at homes that originally, you know, 10 years ago were $200,000, and now they're above $1 million. Like, easily those types of things are happening. And I just, like, how do people afford homes?
I think one of my favorite recent books that I read was Set for Life. And I forgot who the author is, and I need to give him some credit for it. But Set Up for Life is basically saying, you know what? You don't have to buy the whole house. You can buy the house and have friends and, you know, colleagues rent it out, and then you live partial. That is a smart way of doing things. Instead of, I help buyers that are doctors and attorneys, and they have money to buy big mansions or big houses, not mansion around here, but homes that are like 800, even $1 million. But is it even worth it? You could have bought two home, one that's 500, because you can still be happy in a $500,000 home around, or 550, that's probably the average around here. And then have another townhome that you're renting out that generates passive income. Why do you have to live in that big house? People will understand. Everyone wants a 3-bedroom house, 4-bedroom house with an extra office or an in-law suite, but people don't use it. That's money that you people don't understand. If you have an empty rooms that are there for your guests, but your guest comes every other month, or sometimes your in-law comes maybe for Thanksgiving, you know, once a year, that home, that room's vacant. And I have a client, I've always been trying to push her. She wanted to buy a townhome. We purchased a townhome, anticipating her to rent the basement out. And in the end, she never rented out. She wanted to live alone. And I'm always getting on her nerves all the time. Like, you need to rent it out because you're helping your mortgage, you know? And so there you are, living in a house with a 3-bedroom townhome, and you're paying so much. That, to me, it wasn't a smart investment. I think real estate is a great investment tool. It's just, then the decision is a personal decision for you to make. I think the best decision is to buy a house, a small home that you can afford within your means and your budget, and then rent a room out. That's a whole different story. Being a realtor, I've seen so many people wanting to buy homes because they think that's what makes them look good. It's like almost buying a car. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I have to have a nice house. I have to, you know, have a garage, but you have to understand what your styles are. So when I ask clients, it's like I ask them, what do you do on your leisure time? You know, well, if you're most likely in the bedroom and you don't hang out with your friends, then maybe you don't need a large living room, you know? And that's the thing I try to educate people, because everybody wants open concept house. Okay, when they walk in, they want an open concept kitchen, granite countertop, everything's updated. It's pricey. Versus you buy a small little single family or a small townhouse, maybe, you know, the kitchen needs some update, but you're just living alone and you rent it out with a best friend of yours down in the basement, and you build great relationships with them in the future. Man, 10 years from now, you're going to have some good money to buy something. But they don't see real estate that they're living in right now that could be a huge asset down the road. They just think that they're buying a house so they can live in and, you know, entertain some guests and family relatives that comes once in a while, which is fine. It's just that you got to be smart.
I think that ideas like that, or the thinking that you help with, like, that's some of the benefit of working with an advisor, or realtor. What are your thoughts on, you know, people who are trying to sell or buy on their own? Like, I think that that's always been a concept that has tried to sneak in there, and then people kind of realize the value that it brings. Like, has that changed over the past decade?
I think it should change over the past decade because of the informational that we've got. You know, we're in the informational age. Back in the days, if you want to look for homes, you got to look at a newspaper, right? Here, you can look at any homes that are on Zillow. Here's one thing I've always tried to educate every client is we're drowning in information in this age, but we're lacking in wisdom. And that's what it is. You have all the information you want, but you don't know what to do with it. You don't know what's proper. Anybody could write an article, right? Anybody could. You don't need a real estate license to write an article on real estate. You could be a New York Timer and write an article on real estate and have no idea. Well, you know, real estate is it almost an art. People don't know this, but it's an art. It's understanding, you know, the husband and the wife, the dynamics between two of them, and figuring out, hey, this might not be the home that you might want for your kids down the road, etc. But people so much, they just think that they're able to search out, well, I need a real estate advisor when they can look at everything online. Sure. I've had so much clients doing that and then calling me later. And this is what they, as a buyer, this is what they tell me. Tim, I have a whole bunch of properties, homes. It's so confusing. What do I need to do? First, you got to talk to a lender. Have you talked to a lender to pre-qualify you? Because we need to know your purchasing power. Oh, no, I haven't talked about it. I just want to look at the homes. It happens in stages, right? And what, you know, and what's the purpose of the home? Oh, I want this and this and that. Well, that's what everybody wants, but can you afford it? I don't know. Well, we gotta look for a lender. And with a seller, it's a whole different story though. As a seller, you probably want to save money because you don't want to use a real estate agent to sell your home. But here's an issue. I just ran into a good friend of mine who was a for sale by owner in her home in Maryland. She listed up actually for a temple, and this temple, like they, you know, we're amateurs at what we do, right? So she'll go into the home, she'll clean it up. She called me, and I was like, I gave her an appraiser to, I was trying to help the person out. So gave a person an appraiser. She appraised the home, so she knows exactly what the home is going to be worth on the market. She was still unable to sell the home. Why is that? Because there's many things. Number one, her pictures were off. It was awful. She took a camera. She thinks she's a professional photographer. You're taking pictures and you know nothing about lighting. You don't know nothing about how people want to see this home. And her home was really hard to sell. That's all there is. So there's particular type of clients that would like and appreciate her home, but she doesn't get it. She just sees it as another house that needs to be sold. Well, her house is actually placed in almost an industrial complex area. So anyone that could buy it wants to be number one. Actually, would be the hard hitters are the ones that can work at home. So that's what she needs to target. Not just a single family with five kids. It's a dad that wants their own particular office that may have clients to come through. Right. So that's all you have to think about. Right. And then number two is she's posting up on Zillow. That's great. Zillow helps, you know, everyone with an internet can go into Zillow, but not a lot of the clients on Zillow are qualified for buying the home. So you need to be, if you want your home to be sold, you need to be in a platform where you have a bunch of buyers willing and able to buy a house. So that's why I say, if you're able to connect with a real estate agent, they're able to link you up with our Bright system, for example, over here, and then that will basically syndicate out to every other realtor.
Do you see those as being a disruptor or some of these online platforms?
Oh, no. Oh, I people view it as a disruptor, and I think it ideas are always ideas, and I'm pretty sure the CEOs are making millions of dollars over it, and that's great. Would it be as a disruptor? Kind of in a way, but would it kill the industry or kill as a realtor? No. People want to, they see the house, they view the house online. People always want to see it. They need mm-hmm. a realtor to bring them in to see that house and be educated enough to help them figure out what's wrong with the house, what's good, what's not good, and what they need to look for. It's always the human connection that it's so hard to replicate if you're, you know, an online site just showing pictures, right? No, we have 3Ds now. You know, I have my listings. You can go on, you know, 3D. You can zoom. You even have that video thing where you can look at it. That's great. I had one of that. I was just like, that's so cool. But you're missing, you know, the Tim that's walking near you and the smell of the home. You know, sometimes you go in there, the house doesn't smell good. The picture looks great, but there's that cat smell. Mm-hmm. You got to get out of it.
Yeah, or the feeling. Feeling when you walk in the door, the feeling of the neighborhood.
Yes. And I'll tell you, this is so funny from all my experience. I think that women are great at buying homes. I don't know what it is. I always, when I walk with a husband and wife, I'm always observing the wife because the husband lives, like he doesn't know most of the time that the wife loves the house. Like she gets the feeling and we don't know what the feeling is. We don't know why, how, but it is. But then when I get that she gets it, I kind of rub the husband. I'm like, I think this is our house. And it's awesome. It's always right. Women has this great intuition, and I respect that so much. This is why people don't know, but real estate is almost like, it's like women are great realtor because they understand that too. And so this is, I respect it. I know that's something that you always gravitate towards too.
Yeah, no, I love that you said that. Let's talk a little bit about this digital world. So you are up on TikTok, Facebook. I love your Facebook posts that show like the worst photo in real estate this week. How is that helping you? Is that more to like build up your brand?
So my thought process is I post anything that I like and stay consistent with it. That's all there is to it. Like I love my TikToks. My, was it real bad real estate photos? It's because I think those pictures are hilarious. You know, I could have easily posted something else, like maybe, you know, hey, here's something that came up on the market this week. And for me, it's like, I really don't care what came on the market. I care about this silly image here on this corner of like a bathroom that has two toilets or something like that. And I think it's hilarious. And I wanted to share it to my database because I know people in my database enjoy it.
Well, let's talk about the future. Like, where do you see Northern Virginia going over the next, I'm just going to say 6 months because we don't know about this whole pandemic thing. But for the real estate market, like, where do you see Northern Virginia? Do you see it continuing to just keep going? I know you're talking about the housing prices maybe will slow down, but still stay steady.
Yeah, definitely. So numbers are showing that it hasn't slowed down just because of from all the new listings that we see on the market and all the closings. It just hasn't, there hasn't been any sign number-wise, mathematic-wise, just numbers that is slowing down. But do I foresee some type of slowdown? I think there has to be. It's just so unsustainable. But here's one thing too. I read this too, that our CEO was talking, that interest rate has remained so low that even we need to start increasing it up, bringing it up. But if it goes up, that in turn might even cause a little miniature real estate crash in itself because people are now panicking. So if you think about it, maybe if you reduce interest, or increase interest rate, you might have more buyers buying it because now they realize that, wait, interest rate has gone significantly up. You know, and the average interest rate, come on, it used to be like 7%, 6%. Now we're really low. We're so low that it's so hard to see it go any lower. And in the future, six months down the road, it could maintain like this, but eventually it has to slow down. There has to be some sign of slowdown.
Do you still feel like this area is the best area to be for real estate?
Real estate in the DC area, being a realtor in the DC area is probably a blessing in disguise. We don't have to sell as much homes. Home prices is just been so stable. And for me, I have my own biases, you know, so I'd rather be buying and selling in Virginia, actually, than, you know, in other parts of the country. But Virginia, D.C., and Maryland were pretty functioned the same. But just Virginia-wise, I see it run a little bit more efficient in terms of the real estate market.
Yeah, what makes Northern Virginia so special?
It's special because as a landlord, you get, you know, it's much, I would say, has better structure set up for you versus in D.C., it's different. It's a different dynamics. There's certain rules and regulations. It's harder to be a landlord. And then, you know, you need more money, you know, to be spending if you want to purchase properties over there. In Northern Virginia or Virginia in general, You know, it's just a little bit more wide. And I like the contracts. I like the Virginia's, you know, our 16-page contracts much better. It's, everything's kind of labeled out. So it's you can't go wrong with it. So it's much easier for me to submit in a contract in terms of that, too. So if I were an investor, I would invest. If I want to be a landlord, I would invest in Virginia.
What about Keller Williams? Where do you see yourself?
I'm stuck here forever. I'm not even sure if I'm allowed to be sharing this. Maybe I am. I don't know. We'll see. If I ever get in trouble from my broker, So I'm one of their investors, their partner at Keller Williams in Falls Church. So we now have three different firms that we're in charge of. So along with a bunch of other investors and partners in the firm, pretty much in this, and this is my career. This is where I'm going to see myself until hopefully I retire. You know, it's just the culture of I'm not saying in Keller Williams in general. I think Keller Williams is great, but the culture in our own firm, in KW United here, is something that you come in and you get the feel. We're like, this is where I want to really grow my business. There's people that believe in me. You know, people are always willing to do things that are just amazing, you know. So here's one thing that I'll give an example. You're doing all the social things that are unrest that's going in with Black Lives Matters. And our company, Keller Williams, you know, our CEO sent out a mass email saying how we need to support this movement. This social injustice and this racism has no place, no matter how you place it, how what position you are. And our office took it to heart. And our office was probably one of the first to say, hey, we're going to create having a task force, but meet every month to talk about racism and how, you know, and we'll invite judges, we'll invite police officers, everybody. And there's 40, 80 something people that shows up. There's not even 40, 80 people here most of the time, but we show up because we care. People, leadership care, and we didn't have to do that as a profession. You know, we're not making any money sitting in front of a Zoom call, but we did it because we felt like it was the right thing to do. And, you know, no one needs to know about it but us. So we're working to always, it's something that, for me, it helps me to say, okay, well, you have a company that's willing to do the right thing, even when it's not popular or something that's politically tied, you know, to stand up and say, you know what, this is what we agree that is wrong and we're going to move forward. You know, some agents might not like it. Some agents might love it. That's great. We're going. This is the direction. And
I like that. There's a marketer, Christopher Lockhead, someone who I follow. He has a marketing podcast, and he talks about this time period, the pandemic, the social injustice. This is the time that will define companies' reputation for years and years moving forward. Yeah. So I think that's a smart move for your culture, for the community, but also as a business.
Yeah. Right.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. I want to give you an opportunity because you have such a great TikTok profile, a social media. I want everyone to be able to follow you. What's the best way for them to connect with you personally or for them to be able to follow some of your social media?
Yeah, I don't know if they can follow me on TikTok. I honestly, I'm great at TikTok. I don't even know how people follow people on TikTok.
I will post the link.
People can also email me and we'll figure out something. It's Tim Hong at KW. But I think my TikTok is Tim Hong Realtor or something. But I don't even sure how people follow me. It's a thing, you know?
If it's possible, I'll figure it out. I'll link some of your videos. I think they're cool. And then if people want to reach out to you personally about real estate, mentorship, you know, anything, if they're interested in getting in real estate, how can they reach you?
Yeah, timhong@kw.com. And just reach out to me, folks. It's you know how people are always afraid of giving numbers to a real estate agent. Sometimes I want to have coffee, talk, and see what I can do to help. And if I make money from it, great. If I can help you, that's even better. That's what life is about. I've helped so many people that probably, you know, I've never seen again. But at the end of the day, I could sleep well at night and said, God, I've done my work. Thank you. You can take me now if you need. So,
hey, I'll vouch for you any day. Yeah. I think that I'm one of your biggest fans, Tim.
Cool. Nice. I'm yours too, Jessica. People don't know, but you work your butts off and you deserve everything. Like from where you started, from where you are, it's a story in itself. And I'm honored to be your friend. Blessed. You're awesome.
Thank you.
You got it.
Thank you for tuning in. You can listen to this episode and subscribe to future episodes on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to give us that 5-star review so that we can get our podcast out to more and more listeners. If you are a business leader or know of any business leaders that you would like to nominate to be a guest on the show, please visit us at thenovabusinesspodcast.com.